Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is Robert Doucette. He's a downtown developer based in Syracuse. Last month, he was one of the winners of the Urban Innovation Award from the Downtown Committee of Syracuse. Bob, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
I want to start with a question about the type of developer you are. When conversations about economic development come up, I do often hear you invoked as the alternative to a mall developer, or even sometimes the anti-mall guy. Is there truth to that?
Well, let's see, anti-mall guy. I certainly have not ever had any interest in developing malls. I don't believe in I have a hard time with just single-purpose kinds of development, which I'm much more interested in the type of development I do, and that's mixed-use development, which involves a variety of uses, and I think it lends to building a greater sense of community, and so that's just been my preference and continues to be.
Yeah, and on that line, then, is there a particular approach or overall way of thinking about development that you follow that informs the way that you see projects?
Yeah, well, as you said, I am a, quote, downtown developer. I believe in cities. I believe in density and the kinds of things that result from density in cities. And so that's what I'm focused on. It's really about a lifestyle. It's about how people live their lives every day when they get up in the morning and when they go to bed at night. It's a different way to live when you're in an urban environment than other kinds of environments like suburban or rural or, you know, other types of living arrangements. The urban style of living is unique. And it has some unique features to it, which I value very, very highly.
What were the biggest challenges that you encountered in trying to do some of the projects that you've done downtown?
Well, certainly early on, the challenges were multiple. starting with the fact that my partner and I at the time, George Curry, we didn't really have any money. We didn't have any resources. I did not have any experience. And those are two things that, you know, count for a lot in business. I had neither. And some people accuse me of having no brains either. So that's a trio right there. But, you know, kidding aside, I mean, I think that there was the challenge of raising capital and equity for these projects that we started, and also from the banking community and the general community, that this kind of development couldn't really happen here. I don't know why that was the attitude, but that certainly was the attitude, that this was Syracuse, New York, and this wasn't New York or City or Boston or some other metropolitan place, and, you know, the downtown was dead and gone, and that was of another era, and et cetera, et cetera. So I think that those are the kinds of challenges that we faced.
And what do you think it is about you or your life that drew you to focus on this kind of development? I mean, are you born and raised an urban person? What drives it?
That's really funny. I was born and raised the opposite of an urban person. I was born in Little Falls, New York, and spent the early part of my life until I was a junior in high school in Dowdsville, New York. It was population somewhere swinging between 3,000 and 3,500. We had more cows than people, I can guarantee you that. Then my parents moved outside of New York City and right up the in Rockland County. And so I got to spend a fair amount of time in New York, and I just loved it. And there was aspects of, believe it or not, there was aspects of the city that reminded me of a small town, and a couple of real important ways. You know, people in Dowdsville walked. most everywhere. They didn't have to drive. When I was growing up in that little tiny town, we had everything we needed. It was a pedestrian lifestyle. We knew a lot of our we knew everybody in town. Well, it's kind of like living in a neighborhood in a larger city, you know, that you're on foot, that you make these kinds of relationships that are face to face, and that's one of the things a city does. You know, it brings people face to face. You're not behind the the windows of an automobile, and so there was some similarities. And so I had that experience, and then I had the opportunity to live in Washington D.C. for a period of time. And that also, you know, really, I just became a cityphile. I just became somebody that was fascinated with cities and loved cities. And I just love that lifestyle. And that's what drew me to it. As I said, my good friend and partner, George Curry, and I shared that when we started out, shared that love for cities. And that's what drove me in that direction. And Grant, I wanted to do, you know, I wanted to do something for this, for the place that I lived. Mm-hmm. And I believe in that kind of thing. It's something that is important to me to give back to your, wherever you are and whatever you're doing, and give back to the community that you live in. And so that was important to me. And the idea of developing something that would really enhance community was something that I just wanted to do.
Which project are you most proud of, and why?
Well, I have to say it was the very first project that we did, and the reason why is because we just stumbled through this, feeling our way. And I had to learn everything just by experience. And excuse me. I mean, I certainly knew a little bit. When I was in law school, I took some courses that related to what I was doing. But I had no background in finance or real estate or anything like that. So we really had to feel our way through this, and it was a challenge. It was a real challenge.
And just for our listeners, what was that project?
It was called the Labor Temple Building, where Possibilities is on the first floor, and that was our first tenant. That's the tenant that we recruited.
So the beginnings of what became Armory Square,
yeah,
then,
right? Yeah. And I would have to say it was, I think, not the smallest project, but just about the smallest project that I've done. But it was memorable because of the fact that it was absolutely, totally brand new, and for a brand new experience that we had to learn as we went along.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Syracuse downtown developer Robert Doucette. Wanted to ask you about the future of the downtown development from a particular perspective. A couple weeks ago, I interviewed Laura Levine, who's one of the candidates, mm-hmm, for Syracuse mayor. Mm-hmm. And in my conversation with her, she made a point of saying that although the development downtown has been laudable, it may not be sustainable. And that's her word. And what she was getting at was the idea that what's happened is that a cohort of younger adults has located there, but that they could very well leave as they age, not be replaced, and then the demand for business in the area would not be sustained. Could I get your take on how sustainable you see the current population that's downtown and the business demand that's there?
Yeah. Well, I think that I've never met Laura, but I'd like to meet her, and I think she needs to understand that it isn't just young people who are moving downtown. We have it's across the spectrum. We have older folks who are moving downtown and loving being in downtown. And I think in terms of its sustainability, you know, I've looked. This is what I believe. Okay, cities have been around for 10,000 years, and the idea of cities is not going away. It's just not. It's not going away. In fact, most of the population on the Earth is becoming urbanized. Is it sustainable? From my perspective, absolutely, it's sustainable, and it's going to grow. I think that we have plenty of room for growth. Could something happen that would change things? Of course. What do I know? How do I know about the future? But I can tell you what, from my experience and what I believe to be the case, I think it's absolutely sustainable. I think we're on a track of it's become more and more popular.
What do you think would get even more people to want to come downtown and locate there and live there? Is it simply a matter of the supply of housing, or are there other things
There's other things. You know, Grant, you and I and everybody that's listening to this knows what kind of places they like. They do, right? I mean, you can name them and I can name them. What is common about them? Well, one thing is that they have activities that we like to engage in. So what are those that we don't have? Well, we certainly need a grocery store. We need some movie theaters. We need perhaps more, kinds of art galleries or whatever, restaurants. But the other thing is physical beauty. People are drawn to beautiful places, and that's undeniable. And whether you're rich or poor makes no difference. People love to be in beautiful places, and places that feel safe and secure, and people are friendly. Those are the kinds of things that we need to be aware of and work on. I mean, I think the physical environment is very important. I'm somebody who spends a good deal of time in Boston because my children are in that area. And you know, if you walk along and go through the commons in Boston, well, gosh, that is something that you want to be near every single day. And you can think of just the cities that you like to go to. And well, what about the places in those cities that are so beautiful and so interesting that you want to be near them and be a part of them and have access to them? Those are the kinds of things we have to pay attention to, and will enhance the possibility that this is going to grow and continue and be something that's a real bright spot in central New York.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Robert Doucette, a downtown developer based in Syracuse. I wanted to get your thoughts about different ways in which the government can help or not help economic development. Do you have thoughts about the tax credit approach to attracting particular development projects into an area?
Yeah. Well, tax credits have been, I think no one can deny that they've been really critical to the success of some of the downtown projects. They include historic rehab credits, which have been available for properties that are designated as historic, and it's a federal income tax credit, which is really the way, going back to what I was talking about before, that's the way I attracted direct equity when we started out. The other types of government assistance that's happened in the last number of years has come through the state of New York and with the governor's program, regional economic development councils, and it's been quite successful. I think that to help these projects get along. Now, will those things be maintained, and should they be maintained? That's a good question. I'm hopeful that as we go along, that the market will strengthen to the point where that the need for those kinds of credits will diminish. That's my hope. So,
well, what are your thoughts about you mentioned the governor's programs? One element of them is the government just trying to build businesses outright. I mean, that is another piece of it, like the film hub in DeWitt.
Right.
What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I like the idea, but I would like to see. I don't know if we've seen the full benefit of those yet. So, I guess I'm conservative in the idea that private business is really what develops jobs. But I do think the government plays a role, and I think that a government investment. I liken it to a garden. That we need to prepare the soil bed, the bed where the flowers grow. I think that that's where the government can come in. They can help prepare that bed for growth, and then hopefully the private sector will provide the seeds and the actual plants that grow in that garden. I'm hopeful that. But that this is the way we would approach this. But I do think the government has a role. For instance, in public spaces. Public spaces is exactly what it says. It's public space and it belongs to the public. And that's a place which I think we should invest our money in. And of course, there's always pushback. We don't have enough money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which all legitimate. But I would also have as a rejoinder to that, I would say that. Take downtown. Downtown is one of the few places that we have that's growing and returning monies to those investments. So from my perspective, let's double down on what's working. Mm-hmm. That's what's creating an increase in tax revenues. Every time we develop a building, every time we develop property that people come and live in and rent stores in, that creates a tax effect. And so I think that money spent for those kinds of things, public improvements, beautification, that's money well spent. I would extend that to the arts. The arts are another place which I think are a good investment. And that's what I in some ways, I think that that's the concept that we're missing, is that in every aspect of life, you can just throw your money away or you can put it somewhere where it's going to return and return value to you and increase that and value increases. That's the way I think we should be looking at the way public monies are involved.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, and my guest is Syracuse developer Robert Doucette. You recently co-wrote an opinion piece in the Post Standard which argued against a tunnel to replace the I-81 viaduct through Syracuse. Now, the tunnel has been held up by many as the more expensive but best of both worlds option between a community street grid with rerouted traffic on 481 and, on the other hand, rebuilding the viaduct as it is. But in your piece, you cite a number of problems with the tunnel option. Could you just summarize what you think are the most important problems with going down that path?
Yeah, I think that I don't think it's the best of both worlds. I really don't. In the piece, among other things, but with a tunnel, there's an entrance and there's an exit. You will enter this tunnel somewhere in the north, and you will exit somewhere in the south. It doesn't provide any exits or possibilities to get off the tunnel so that you can go places within the city. It still will cut off streets. Everybody says, well, we shouldn't pay any attention to what it costs. Why shouldn't we? I mean, it costs, 2.5 to 3 times as much as a community grid. And the question is, for what? I've said this before. This is a solution for a problem that doesn't exist. The infrastructure that's already in place in this county with Route 481 provides us the perfect means in which to get around the city and to also access the city, both. And so, if that didn't exist, okay, and we were just cutting off traffic. North-south traffic by creating a community grid, well, I would have a different opinion, but it doesn't. It adds – all the studies that the Department of Transportation have done says it adds about 4 to 6 minutes to your travel time. Well, that's not enough for me to spend an extra $2.5 to $3 billion on a mile-and-a-half tunnel. It just – it just makes no sense to me. It really doesn't.
Yeah, on that point, you raise in the piece the possibility that if we do the tunnel, it might come with some kind of toll system attached to it because of the cost.
I hadn't
considered that. How do you have any idea of how likely that is? Nah. Looking around the country, or
around the country, I think that if you look around the country, it's likely. I don't know whether it's likely in this case because I have no idea about what it would be. But you know, the other thing too, Grant, is with this tunnel is the cost of Let me just bring up two other factors. One is the construction time, which could be 7 or 8 years.
Let me jump in on that.
Because
I want to make sure that I get this question in, and it's a more general version of what you just said, 7 or 8 years. I've had this nagging, somewhat vague concern about the replacement of I-81, and I wanted to put this to you. If we stipulate that, although the city has some very positive things about its downtown development, but overall it's currently challenged.
Yeah.
It still faces a lot of challenges.
Yeah.
My worry is really about the actual construction of whatever the project is, in the following way, that during that time period, it's going to be so disruptive to travel through or into or around the city that – And it's going to be inevitable that the process is going to take longer than people predict. I think that's just sort of
inevitably.
My concern is that there's going to be a critical mass of people in this area that are just going to become permanently soured on the city to such an extent that it starves. So you used a metaphor about gardens before. Here's my metaphor is that if the first version of I-81 cut the city in half, my worry is that the rebuilding of the second version of I-81 is going to strangle it. I mean, I'm really...
Grant, I think that I do not think your concerns are misplaced. I think they're real. This is the most... active part of not just Syracuse, this with the hospital system and the university system, this is the most active part of central New York. And I totally agree with you that no one's given this enough weight that the construction itself is going to cause an incredible amount of disruptions to people's daily lives. And you're right. You know, let me give you a kind of a parallel that is well known.
We've got about a minute left, quick parallel.
This is well known that you cut off streets for X amount of time in a downtown area, you lose retailers. Mm-hmm. They just go out of business.
That's my worry. Yeah.
But the other last point I want to bring up is the cost of maintenance of a tunnel is the other wild card that we have not put our finger on, and we need to. It's an expensive thing to maintain a tunnel.
That was Robert Doucette. We'll have to leave it on that happy note. But Bob, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, conversations in the public interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program or to hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.